Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Curious first kind of how you evaluate what the start of this offseason has been like and having conversations with a new manager. It's the first time in, 6 years that we haven't had one of those chats with you and Mike Matheny. Has the process been different? I know that you knew Mike Schilt and you know Mike Schilt very well, but there's got to be some level of, change.
Well, I think there is a difference, obviously. I think the most important takeaway right now is really as you start thinking about 2019 and what do the Cardinals need to do differently, what does Mike Schilt want to see done differently? And so majority of the focus on preparation for 2019 has really already begun. I think in the past when we've had some of those end of year press conferences or debriefings, Mike lived here, it was convenient, but I felt like given everything we have going on right now, I don't know if it was just something where just because we've always done it, we need to do it, or if there was a reason to get together. And I mean, as you saw the other day, I just wanted to get everybody sort of up to speed on how we're thinking, what we're thinking, without, drawing a complete roadmap of where we're going.
Is there, and I understand how well you knew Mike and how long you've known Mike Schilt, I feel like we have to say last names, Mike Schilt, but is there anything you learned or appreciate about him now after watching him as a big league manager that maybe you didn't know on July 1?
John? Well, I think the only thing I think that stands out is his ability to communicate and work with the media. I think he did a tremendous job. I think he was very transparent and gracious. And I think that went a long way from a relationship building. You never know how someone's gonna act in that position until you see them, because you can't replicate that at AAA or AA, right? There's maybe one or two people that cover the team versus here you might have 30 or 40. And so I think that was a very impressive talent that we saw come out of him. And in terms of like game management, how he communicates with players, I mean, all of that is, we assume that before we even put him in the interim job.
Have you ever been faced with this much rolling turnover of coaching staff? Really going back to, I guess, the middle of 2017 when you guys made some shakeups even before this year?
No, when you think back to Bill DeWitt and John Mozeliak's tenure with the Cardinals, and that it all started in '96, we've still only had three managers. We are now we're on our third pitching coach. Technically, three GMs. So the turnover has been consistency. And continuity, I think, is one of the strengths of this organization. I was talking with some people earlier, or actually last night, about the volatility of baseball. And right now there's six managerial openings, there's three GM openings, and we've always had that ability to either solve our problems from within, or at least not have to have that huge blow up. And I think that's something that we all take pride in.
You also have a couple of guys, though, that could be in the mix for each of those positions. I know your policy on recognizing interviews. Has Gary gone through a formal interview with the Mets?
So again, as I stated the other day on that type of question, it's up to the Mets to decide what they want to release.
In any event, though, it's flattering that guys that have come up through your organization, that are a part of your organization, draw that kind of interest, and then that you have opportunities
to
retain them, right?
I don't think you'd realize how often it happens, and it's because we don't publicize it, but when you look at organizations, and I'm not like patting ourselves on the back, but I think people look at us as something that they want to replicate. And so there's a lot of guys in our offices, a lot of guys that have been in our uniform that people have wanted to speak with and wanted to hire. You know, one of the toughest parts of my job is actually just maintaining our workforce, because we do lose a lot of talented people year in and year out. And that's a hard part to really try to understand who's a flight risk, who's not, and how do we build around our future.
The goal always to win at the major league level, to prepare players in the organization to contribute at the major league level. But this run the last couple of years, not just in Memphis, but throughout your organization, you guys have won at every level. Winning breeds winning. How important is what your infrastructure that you have set up from Memphis all the way down, what they've been able to accomplish, how important is that?
Well, I do feel like when you look at our more successful periods at the major league level, have been something that you can directly look back at where we were having success down below. I do feel like there's something to a group of players that come up having success, understand winning, and understand what it's all about. I think it makes that transition here easier. I think anybody that's around St. Louis Cardinal baseball, especially here in the city, understands that people expect us to win. And so when you're doing that at the minor league level and you come here, you just want to see that continue. Now, I think the key thing for us is, because there's no doubt we have a talented roster, but you know, winning 88 games was not good enough this year. And it might not be good enough next year. So we have to figure out a way to get ourselves over that hump. So what's going to change an 88-win team to maybe a 94, 95-win team? And that's really what we have to focus on over the next 3 to 4 months.
You use the word accountability in that sense a lot the other day when we chatted downstairs. Why is that word and why is that messaging important for not just you in the front office, but for everyone in this organization, for the players going into the offseason?
Well, I think that the importance of having accountability for your players is directly related to what you expect come February. If you could imagine that your responsibility is to show up on February 15th and be ready to go as a player, and if you are not, what does that do to the rest of us? And I think when you talk about that team mentality, this begins now, and it can't be one of those things where you hear like this off season and then we go into February with some uncertainty. We need to be as prepared as possible. I think Mike Schilt and his staff are going to really focus on that between now and then. And when you look at it at a very holistic standpoint, meaning you have the baseball side, you have the medical side, you have the performance side, we need to wrap all of that into one. And so no stone goes unturned as far as what we have. This has nothing to do with any additions we're talking about. But we go into this knowing that we're giving ourselves the best chance to succeed starting on day one. And so that's what accountability means.
We talked a lot about Marcell Ozuna and his upcoming offseason. When you acquired him last December, you admitted that, you know, a guy coming off a career year, you expect a bit of regression. Were you surprised, though, at some of the, I don't want to say ways he was maybe physically compromised, but were you surprised in some of the areas that he seemed to struggle last year?
He did not seem like the player we were expecting to get. You know, when you talk about surprise, I mean, like, things don't really surprise you when you're looking at it day in and day out. Maybe, you know, if there's some level of frustration. I mean, I will say, like, from an offensive standpoint, when you think back to April, I mean, you had three guys that were really pressing. You had Fowler, you had Karp, and, of course, Ozuna. And when you're looking at sort of the top three or four hitters in your lineup that are begging for hits, it puts a lot of pressure on other people. So, you know, for us, I don't think it was one of those things where we felt like, oh, this is shocking. We were just wondering, how do we get it back to where it needs to be? And so, you know, I do feel like when you look at sort of the turn of events in early July, you know, he put up pretty good second half numbers. And when you're close to a 900 OPS in that period, that's sort of who you were hoping to get. But you need that over 6 months, not three.
I mean, if he's compromised and he's a 2.5 win player, does that give you hope that after this offseason he can be, maybe not the 2017 player, but he can be the kind of difference-making player you thought you were acquiring?
Well, again, at times we thought we saw that, but we need that for 6 months, not three. So are our expectations for him to be a different player than he was this year? Yes, but that's the part of being held accountable. That's the part of making sure he understands the expectations as we sit here today, because, you know, last year we never had this conversation. We traded for him. And then he shows up, and all of a sudden, the arm doesn't quite feel like he thought it would.
Then after visiting, he'll have a consultation the end of this month with Eletrech.
Yep.
That's who he visited with before he got an injection, right?
Exactly.
Is the best case scenario in your eyes physical therapy and rest this off season?
I would say so. I mean, I don't like to, like, you know, handicap what a scope versus rest would look like, but I don't think pure rest is what he needs. I think there are some things he needs to do with a PT to get him to where he needs to go.
We also talked about Alex Reyes, and you described having a different type of offseason. Knowing what he went through to come back from Tommy John, the setback he had, but still being around the club, what are the expectations, or what are, I guess, the level of excitement about what Alex could be maybe as soon as next spring for your club?
I think expectations are high. I think excitement is a little bit more tampered. And the reason for that is because, you know, he's having another year of having to rehab. So what we thought would be best in his interest, and I think he was really excited about the change, is like not be just in Jupiter every day, not be in St. Louis every day, have another place to sort of get through this. And for anybody that's been through physical therapy and you're in one of these places, which are very desirable, but it can get a little old or stale, he needs a little bit of a freshness. And so we're hoping we can create that for him, give him that opportunity. But nobody wants to pitch more than him. He's very frustrated, and that's one of the things that we're trying to help manage, because here's a guy that knows that sky's the limit, but he hasn't really had that opportunity to prove it.
On a pitching standpoint, it struck me that for the range of conversation that took place a couple of days ago in your session, Miles Michaelis' name was never brought up. As you reflect on the year he had, what he meant, and getting to know him as a person a little bit, what stands out about the 2018 he had and what he meant to this club?
Well, he ended up being our ace. So when you talk about what he meant to the club, it was huge impact. It is sort of funny, though, because, you know, after that meeting or whatever you want to call it, I remember kind of reflecting back, and, you know, we were kind of getting beat up on all our free agent decisions. And
like Miles and Bud were pretty good.
Yeah, they worked out. And, you know, certainly I think that, you know, we were fortunate in getting Miles, but it's a compliment to our scouting department and really identifying that type of talent that fit in well with us. But, you know, really to your point, as a person, as a leader, he brought a lot to the table. Not only did he take the ball every fifth day and he was a horse, but he was a guy that you could really believe in and build around. And you know, he's a special guy.
That phrase, build around, is it premature to ask if you've thought about entertaining him being a part of the club for longer than just the term of his deal next year?
I will say one of the strategies that his agent wanted to accomplish was to get him to market shortly. In other words, get him back from Japan and then ultimately let him have a chance. But I would say this, that, you know, there's a lot of symmetry with trying to find a way to make this work. And at some point, I will hopefully reach out with his agent and see the level of interest.
It strikes me as we chat for just a couple more minutes with John Mozeliak about some of the players that we think about this offseason and how their roles will fit next year. And to look at this postseason, for instance, and the key contributors and the age of guys and the arcs of careers, and to look at Carlos Martinez as a 26-year-old who has now had three or four different incarnations of his career, does Carlos get enough credit as his age for all he's accomplished in a multitude of roles while still admitting that he's battled some injuries and some inconsistencies?
Probably not. I think part of that is, you know, when you are sort of bouncing between roles and injuries, those become, you know, more negative than positive. He is a talented guy. I mean, there's you know, you can make a very good argument that he's one of the top 20 starting pitchers in baseball. But unfortunately, he didn't end the year as a starter. He ended it in the bullpen. And so, you know, what role he has next year, I think, is still to be determined. But I think the best strategy for him is to get himself in a position to start, prove he can start, and then if needs arise that we have to pivot on that, we will. But, you know, ultimately, if you have that type of arm and that type of talent, it does seem like optimizing it in the rotation would make sense.
That was a bit of a, I don't know if outside the box is the right term, but was a decision you guys made to figure out the way to get him to contribute the most impactfully. I remember you on probably September 1 saying, listen, we can talk starter reliever, but we need to talk about getting 27 outs per game. What does it say about Carlos that he was able to embrace that role and, although you fell short of the playoffs, was able to be a big contributor in the last 3 weeks of the season?
I think he actually liked the role.
He likes the spotlight, huh?
Well, I think it allows him to know, like, on any given day, he might be participating. You know, and I think he enjoys that or embraces that. I think, you know, I don't really feel it was outside the box type of thinking as much as it was, like, survival. You know, we could have certainly just shut him down for the year and said, you know, come back next year. But he had the energy and interest of wanting to pitch, and medically everybody felt like if you kept it from, you know, 20 to 30 pitches an outing, he'll be able to respond and rebound, and he did. And so I think from a strategy standpoint, it just made sense.
And finally, Adam Wainwright will be back. I think, obviously, fans excited about that, but I think for Wainwright, we can use the cliche, chip on his shoulder, don't count him out. But what did you see from Adam in his rehab process last year, the way he threw and the way his arm apparently feels that excited you about the kind of structure of deal that you put together?
Well, I think the easiest way to think about that, Waino, is think about his outing in San Diego. And for those who don't remember that, it was 81 mile an hour fastball and trying to do it with smoke and mirrors. And then, you know, fast forward now to September. But a lot happened in between. And that in between was really a lot of peaks and valleys for him. And, you know, he was coming to realization that he may never pitch again. He was experiencing thoughts of what's next. And then all of a sudden, in late July, early August, things started to feel different. And so I think naturally, he all of a sudden went from, I may never pitch again, to this might work. And so it was a process. And it wasn't one that, like, we were Einsteins in solving. It was one that just every time he went out, he felt a little better, felt a little stronger, a little more confident. And as you hear those types of words with somebody like Adam Wainwright, you realize that that is impactful, because all of us who know Adam on a day-to-day basis know he's already confident. He always tells you he's feeling good. But these were things that he was realizing internally. And so when we were thinking about bringing him back, it was really out of the bullpen. And just, you know, it might have been one of those, hey, give him one last opportunity, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, to where he was like, I want to get stretched out. I want to test this. I want to find out if I can do it. And he was checking a lot of boxes along the way. He didn't quite have Alex Reyes's rehab, but it was pretty darn close. And so our confidence in him rose with his. And so ultimately, when you look at the type of deal we structured, he could have taken a far different approach. But he realizes that if it doesn't work, it doesn't handcuff us. And that's, you know, says a lot about the person, about how he thinks about the Cardinals and this organization. And he knows he has a special place here. And so I was just very grateful about how he approached it. He and his agent, you know, it was quick, it was easy, because it was really, it's betting on himself. If he pitches, he makes more money. If he doesn't, you know, no harm in trying.
Speaking of being handcuffed, if you were in Houston in the front row, would you have tried to catch that ball, or would you have let it just hit you right in the chest?
Good question. It's hard not to imagine, you know, trying to protect yourself. But, you know, that's sort of the difficulty of these, the way some of these ballparks are built. So, you know, if you're so on top of the fence, the moment you cross, you can't. If you stay here, you're fine. And, you know, I looked at that play multiple times last night, and there's no doubt there was contact with the glove, but was the glove over or on? I can't tell.
Can you enjoy watching the postseason?
Oh, I love watching the postseason. You know, I was, like, sharing this with...
Does the proximity of your elimination affect that?
No, I think, I like the game of baseball. So, like, you know, sitting there and watching it is, to me, fun. I'm not necessarily rooting for anyone, but, you know, I was listening to the Milwaukee game 2 days ago and how I heard the announcer say that, you know, Craig Counsell last year at the end of the season, rather than going golfing, he watched and studied and took notes on postseason games. And I think that's sort of played into his strategy. And so I think for all of us that are in the industry, there's a lot to be learned or at least observed what happens and how people strategize. And so, you know, that's what I do. And, you know, I'm not necessarily sitting down with a notebook taking notes on every inning, but you certainly see trends and how you can perhaps look to improve your club. Plus, winning players are good to have.
And it's been good baseball.
It's been very exciting baseball. The other night, I did not see the last out of the 115 or whatever finish with the Dodgers, but tried.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. Thank you, guys.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.